too. I have a small ha'ara as to how we can approach the avoda of Musar without falling into certain traps. The major trap that all of the Bale Musar point to, the major pitfall, is that people think that Musar has something to do with their shortcomings. And they learn Musar because they think that they're supposed to be overcoming their shortcomings, and that virtually ends the Musar process. So let's assume for a moment that we all know that that's silly, that Musar has nothing to do with shortcomings, but let's assume for a moment that we can get past the obvious law. So then the question is, when we talk about strengths and building on and capitalizing on strengths, then this red flag of gaiva, this gaiva flag, waves its nasty head, and I can't do that because then I would be a bal gaiva. So I think that to address this properly, let's take a little bit of a step back and ask ourselves, how many of us have had moments where we've tried to imagine a better world than the one that we live in? How many have tried to imagine, wouldn't it be nice if people were like this? There was a president in America who announced that he was going to lead a kinder and gentler nation. A silly little man thought that he could make some sort of change by making the announcement. But it's important to realize that that was people. That was his fantasy, right? That was the dream. The dream was that when he tried to picture the world as a kinder and gentler place, so that was a picture of a better world. So that's very important. Because that's a better world. So that idea of a kinder, gentler nation, what does that say? That says that I was picturing in my mind the world, and I was picturing what would make the world a better, nicer place. Not just a better and nicer place in some sort of moral and ethical way, but a better and nicer place for us all to live. A finer world. Now obviously, a finer world is going to play into a moral and ethical and halachic world, but a better place. So try to do that for a moment. Just for a moment to check yourself. What amud are you up? What daf are you guys up to? Depends. What daf are you up to? Zion. So let me ask you a question. Daf Vav. You have a little bit of a handle on Daf Vav? You feel that you have a little bit of a handle? Who has it feels that it has a little bit of a handle on Daf Vav? A little bit. It can say over the Shakla Vataria, or say has a Tosas that he's familiar with on Daf Vav. Can you say the Shakla Vataria of Daf Vav? Or you can say can you point to a particular Rashi or a Tosas that you think that you could translate? I'm not going to test you. Yeah? Anybody?
Yeah.
So tell me, would the world be a nicer and a better place if everyone had shaychus to Daf Vav? Can you imagine that the world would be a better place, be a nicer place, if everybody in the world, all the Yidden, had shaychus to Daf Vav? Would it be? Do you believe that it would be? Can you picture that? A, that means that everybody in the world has... Yeah, there's lots and lots of room over here if you want to sort of work over into the corner. So the issue then is, first, would the world be a better place if everyone had shaychus... Wait, you can move the tables down if you want to. Just create some more room. If everybody had shaychus to learning, to Torah, would the world be a better place if everyone had shaychus to Daf Vav? Anybody know a halacha? Any halacha at all? In Arba Chelke Shulchan Aruch. Any halacha at all? Anywhere from Shavisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid all the way till the deep, deep outer recesses. You know halacha? Yeah. Would the world be a better place if everyone knew that halacha? That means that everyone had a shaychus with halacha. There was some interest, some desire to know halacha. And everybody knew a halacha. Would the world be a better place? I'm asking you to think about it as deeply and as honestly as you possibly can. If you have any question about it, as to whether the world would be a better place, then tell me what would make the world a better place. So, you say, well, if everybody had... everybody came to a shmooze, had some interest in learning about themselves and about Avodas Hashem, tell me, would the world be a better place? Would the world be a better place? Ask yourself if you feel that the world would be a better place. Yeah?
I'd say that knowledge doesn't make the world a better place, but action might. In other words, everybody can know the halacha, and that doesn't necessarily help. But everybody did the halacha, then maybe yes.
Okay. As compared to a world in which there was not the knowledge of the halacha, so then you still would have to ask the question, is knowledge better than no knowledge? Although you would certainly want to say that action is far, far better than just knowledge. I'm not sure that you would want to negate knowledge.
I'm just thinking that I can think of like one or two halakha that almost every Jew knows, and it doesn't seem to be doing all that much.
I can only imagine what the world would be like if those one or two halachos were also not known. I would imagine that the world would even be a worse place if those halachos, which, let's say, people are finding very difficult to keep, or they don't have the discipline to keep, or whatever the case may be, but the world would be a poorer place if they didn't even know that there was such a halacha. So, the reason I ask you to think about and to imagine the world being a better place is that you need to ask the question a lot of, in what ways would the world be a better place if more of the world was like me? That's what you need to ask. How and in what ways would the world be a better place if everybody in the world were like me in the following regards? The world would be a better place. The reason why this is so useful to use the model of were everybody in the world to be like me in this regard, and I wish that for everyone. I wish for everyone to be like me in this regard. That means if I have some shaychis to a Tosfos and Daf Vav, I wish that for everyone. I wish that for every Jew, a shaychis to that Tosfos and Daf Vav. If I have a particular tendency, a midah, a gift, I wish that for everyone. That wish may or may not be actually fulfilled. Meaning, you may not be able to give everybody your musical talent. And you may not be able to teach everybody to sweat over a Tosfos. But the world would be a better place. And I wish that for everyone. What I have, I wish for everyone. The difference between knowing your milas and gaiva is the last part of the sentence, do I wish it for everyone. When you have a mila and you do not wish it for everyone, you wish it somehow only for yourself in your exclusivity, then you have forgotten about your uniqueness. Because a mila is something like bechira. You can try to get rid of it. You're supposed to try to get rid of it, but you'll never get rid of it. You know that you're supposed to get rid of bechira? That's the drill. You're supposed to try to get rid of bechira. Try to make everything very simple. Try to make everything black and white. Try to make everything, there should be no bein hashmashos. Everything is either clearly day or clearly night. What will happen in the end? There will be bechira. In the end of the day, there will be bechira, because that's the gzeiras habore, that there will be bechira. But our job is to try to push back the frontiers, make this absolutely clear this way, and this absolutely clear that way. There's no day, there's clear that it's day, it's clear that it's night. Will there still be bein hashmashos when you're all done? Yeah, there will still be bein hashmashos, even if it's just a chut asayra, even if it's just a moment. But there will be a bein hashmashos. But our job is to try to eliminate it. In the end, it will be there. So too, with regard to your milas. Your milas are something that you're trying to share with and help others attain your milas. Will you ever succeed? No. Your milas will always remain your milas. But you will have used your mila properly by trying to share it. By wishing it for everyone. To take a look a little bit, it's a fascinating psychological study of Korach, going back a little ways. Fascinating psychological study. What does he accuse Moshe of?
Nepotism.
Fascinating statement. Everybody's holy. We have a holy nation. Everybody's holy. Why are you sticking your head above the rest of the nation? It's a holy people. Why are you sticking your head above the holy people? Interesting paradox, right? Because what is Korach trying to do? He's trying to stick his head above the people. And who is he speaking to? He's speaking to an interesting man, right? He's speaking to a man who, when he's confronted with the fact that there are two Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael, who stepped out of line a little bit. He got Nevuah. Yoshua says, oh, what's going to be with your leadership? He says, HaMekanei Atali. Mi Yitein Halevai, that what? That what? What does Moshe Rabbeinu misfollow? Mi yitain, that what?
Shtol bin Nevi'im!
Tell me, is that Moshe Rabbeinu, is he afraid that he's going to lose the Mila of the Ava Nevi'im? He's trying to give it away. Halevai, everybody would be a Navi. Halevai, everybody should speak to the Rabbanu Shalom, Panim El Panim, Halevai. I know how wonderful it is. Halevai, that it would be by everybody. And in the end of the day, it's uniquely Moshe Rabbeinu. And the truth is that it goes hand in hand. If you were to do a little bit of analysis on Korach, a little bit of armchair analysis, say, Korach, you are, first of all, a fabulously wealthy person. Chazal go out of their way to describe Korach's wealth in hagzamot, in exaggerations that you can only interpret in maral terms of numbers. 300 donkeys to carry the keys for his storehouses of his wealth. Where are the storehouses of the wealth? Why don't you give me how many donkeys it took to carry the wealth? What, I need 300 keys. So wealth he left back in Mitzrayim, right? He's got 300 donkeys to carry the keys for wealth that he left in storehouses in Mitzrayim. Chazal say that he tripped over one of Yosef's storehouses of the wealth that he gathered from all of Mitzrayim. He tripped over one of the storehouses and he made it his own. He had 300 donkeys carrying the keys. So where's the wealth? Where's the wealth? Okay. So tell me how many donkeys it took to carry. No, 300 donkeys to carry the keys. You almost have to. You're forced to look at a maral. You know, you can't go anywhere else because what am I supposed to do with it? Right. 300 donkeys carrying the keys. How big are the keys? Are they monster keys? Are they little keys? How many keys can a donkey carry? I mean, what does that mean? Okay, so you have a fabulously, fabulously wealthy man. Huh? That you know about him. Without knowing the details, you know that he's a fabulously wealthy man. You also know that he has enormous powers of persuasion. Tremendous capacity, an enormous power of persuasion. How do you know that he has enormous powers of persuasion? Manages to turn the finest and the best of Klal Yisrael over on their ears, right? Korach. Do you know your milas? In what way are you trying to wish for all of Klal Yisrael your milas? What are you doing to recognize that those milas are yours and to try to share those milas, so to wish them for others? In the end of the day, it will not take away your mila. Wish it for others. What he could have accomplished as a magid, as a darshan, can you imagine somebody who's able to turn an entire Sanhedrin over on their head? Imagine what a powers of persuasion he had. But he would not think of the milas as something that he was wishing for others. He was thinking of the mila as something that he wanted to retain for himself. He wasn't wishing it for other. If he would go and give classes, let me give you classes on how to be a public speaker. Classes on public speaking. Tell me, do you think that anybody would ever be a public speaker the same way he is? No. It would not be. But it would still be a good idea for him to give classes on public speaking, because he probably knows public speaking better than anybody else walking the planet. So why isn't he giving classes on public speaking? The answer is, he lost track of the function, of the role of a mila. The function and the role of a mila is that which I am wishing for the world. Were that the world were a little bit more like me, it would be a better world. And to act on that information by moving forward with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. And the corollary of that, I think, is very clear. The corollary is that if every single person has nested within them some unique mila that the entire world needs, that means that the person next to you also has a mila that the world needs. And if there is something that you can do that would help that mila see the light of day, see its expression in the world, then the same way that our milas are going to be toveya us, our milas are going to stand before us in the world of truth, our milas are going to come and say, what did you do? I was yours. What did you? Oh no, I was so focused on my shortcomings, and I was so focused on my guilt, and I was so focused on what I get wrong. You know, I didn't have time to think about the milas. And wait a second. But the mila was there because the world couldn't get along without it. Kadosh Baruch Hu has no doubles. Are you aware of that? This is not like children playing Rebbe cards. You know, I'll trade you a Rav Moshe for a Rav Chaim Ozer. You know, this is not children with their cards or with Ajuim. You know, we are not doubles. Every single person, the Mishnah and Sanhedrin is very explicit about it. Every single one of us is absolutely unique. Just as our faces are unique, every single person has his unique gift and his unique tchunos that have to be shared. His unique pshat in the Gemara, his unique understanding of the world, his unique take on things, his unique aspect of the world that has to be shared. And that's, we're going to have to answer to that. We're going to have to stand in judgment, not before some finger-wagging king, but before the talents and the kochos that each of us are given. What happened to the pshat that you said in that tosfos? What'd you do with it? Well, my chavrusa seemed to be more sure that he was right, so I just kind of let it go. But did you think about it? As to whether or not he was right or you were right? Did you work it through again? Did you see perhaps that there are two different unique approaches emerging here? Maybe his mila is emerging and my mila is emerging, and we can hold the two next to each other and celebrate them? What did you do? Wasn't so important. It seemed to be important to him, wasn't so important to me, so I kind of let it go. What would have happened to the mila? It's 48 milas, the mission of the Brises list in the end of Avos. We add these Brises, 48 milas in Kinyan HaTorah. Every single person should find in that list aspects that they seem to bring to the story, perhaps an interesting combination of those. And the world is a richer place because you're in it. And the same way that we're going to have to answer for our milas, we're going to have to answer for the milas of the person next to us. Perhaps a smile, an encouraging word, a gentle approach, and asking him a question for clarification to try to understand what he's about. Perhaps that would have brought his mila into the world. And I didn't do it because I was too busy having my own ego trip. I was too busy being guilty. So I didn't reach out. But I have a mila. I tend to ask good questions, or I tend to be able to synthesize well, I summarize well, So his mila didn't see the light of day either. So I'm going to have to answer for my milas, I have to answer for the milas of those that I could have celebrated. I'm not talking chas v'shalom about having put the person down, or spoken lashon hara about the person, or other things that squelch the person's ability to have their mila appear or exist in the world. Let's leave that for outside of this room. Just what I appreciate that Klal Yisrael can't get along without the mila of every single one in Klal Yisrael. We can't. The story is not going to be complete until the mila of each person in Klal Yisrael makes its appropriate contribution to the whole of Klal Yisrael. And if somebody thinks that somehow the Mila of Rav Eliashiv is greater than their own Mila, in the sense of one is significant and one is insignificant, so we have to watch out. We have to watch out. Because it's very easy to do surrogate milas. All of my milas are in him plus 700 more, so I become superfluous. And now it's mutter for me to just carry on my life as an insignificant nodule in the world. Because he's got all my milas plus 700 more. The minute we do that, party's over. So again, how do you protect from gaiva? Gaiva means that I have milas and I'm not looking to wish it for everybody. I don't wish it for everybody. I want it for myself. And as actually I would actually block other people from being able to give full expression to that, to some aspect of the mila that is similar to mine. A healthy understanding, and this is the basis of everything that we do in terms of our personal growth, is I wish that the world was a little bit more like me in these regards. Let me see what I can do to help bring that into the world, to help bring that mila out into the world, and to make it more available and more accessible and more reachable to as many people as I possibly, as the Kodesh Baruch Hu chooses to put me in their sphere of influence. And when you find yourself hammering it down somebody's throat, you say, I have a feeling that I got stuck on my mila and forgot that I need his mila. And so the sharing process goes both ways. When I find myself shoving my mila down somebody's throat, it's because I forgot that his mila is absolutely indispensable to me, just as my mila is indispensable to the world. Questions, comments, reactions to the introduction here. Yeah.
Everyone has shrinus, everyone has milas. If one is attacking this for shrinus, is that strengthen his milas or his milas are milas?
It's the reverse, is the process. The only way to deal with your chesronus is by strengthening your milas. Your milas are your tool. Your milas are your tool. That is what you were given. To do everything, to make your contribution to the world, to make a tikkun to yourself. Your milas are what you were given, and the milas keep on growing. But the milas were given. You can't, this business about somehow being metaking the chesronos as a preamble to dealing with milas is Christian. There is no basis for that in Yiddishkeit at all. Mamish, there's not a trace of it.
Sooner or later, say talk.
That's right. On the level of Maisa, if you want to be mitaken at something on the level of Maisa, if you're not moving away from that which is wrong, and you just keep on doing it, so it's okay. It'll eventually disappear. So on the level of Maisa, there has to be Sumer Avaseto. You can't keep on being tovel v'sheretz b'yodo. It doesn't work. But the tool that you will use, let's say a person has something that they have difficulty with a discipline in a certain area, so the place where they look for that is their discipline in some other area. I recently spoke to a person who she's not happy with her parenting. She is just completely obsessed with being a good parent. That's an absolute guarantee of bad parenting. No question. Parents need a natural parent. And she's just obsessed with being a good parent. So that'll knock out being a good parent defective. So I asked her if there's ever a time when she feels at peace, where she's not being obsessive. Is there ever a time when she feels at peace? So she said, and when she paints. I had no idea. Speaking to the person over the phone, 10 time zones away, I had no idea. Well, fascinating. So I asked her, tell me, would you like your children and your husband to know you when you paint? To know you as you are when you paint? She said, absolutely. Halavai. Halavai. I said, tell me, when you're buying supplies or when you're cleaning up, you go to the store to buy supplies for your painting, or when you're cleaning up afterwards, how about then? How do you feel then? Just as relaxed. Just as it spills over from the painting spills over to buying supplies, to cleaning up. Doesn't anything ever go wrong? You go to the store to buy supplies and they don't have? Sure, yeah, it happens, but a little disappointing. But, and when you're cleaning up, something doesn't spill on something that you didn't anticipate was going to get dirty, and you have to, that happens. What do you do? Well, yeah, it's a little disappointing, but clean it up. Would you like your husband and your children to know you when you're buying supplies or when you're cleaning up the painting? Yes, very much so. Very much so. So you're not even painting. Not even painting. You're at the store buying supplies. And you are the gift that you were put in the world. You're a very relaxed person. You're at peace. You picked up some juke. I don't know how to translate it. You picked up some juke. And you decided that the only way that you can parent is by not being that person. Not being the person that you are when you're buying supplies or cleaning up. Forget it, leave alone that when you're painting. No. That's not good parenting. Good parenting is frenetic, obsessive parenting. So that means that you have a gift, and you've even seen the gift. You've seen it. It's not like I have to make it up. I ask you a question I had no idea. You've seen the gift. I've never seen you paint. I've never seen you anything. Never seen you paint. I haven't seen you, clean up from paint or buy paint. You yourself know the gift. What are you doing with it? That's yours. That gift was yours. Strengthen that gift so that it spills over to more areas. And eventually it will spill over to your parenting as well. Because if you want to overcome your obsessive thinking about your parenting, you're not going to overcome it by somehow conquering the deficit. With what tool will you conquer the deficit? What is in your hand? What tool is in your hand to conquer the deficit? Well, I read some books on parenting. In fact, I've read every single book on parenting. What in the world makes you think that the book on parenting is somehow going to give you the tool to overcome this deficit? It's a mila. If the book that you read helps expand and develop and push forward the boundaries of your mila, then it's a good book. Then that was very useful. It went with my mila. You know what? It gave me some aspects of this mila. Wow, I hadn't thought of that. Yes, she had never thought of the going to the store to buy supplies or cleaning up, that her mila, in fact, had already expanded. And once I pointed out that her mila had expanded, she started noticing how the mila expands to the day that she's going to go paint. Well, guess what? It's just a matter of time before she's able, with that focus, to expand the mila to the point where she can parent that way. Because she's expanding the milas. And if you ask her, tell me, would you like everyone to have the peace that you have when you paint? Would you wish that for everyone? Absolutely. Well, would you like to talk about it with people? Would you like to share with people the experience of that peace? Very much so. If I found the opportunity, I'd very much like to share. Do you think that anyone else will feel the same way? Now she stopped. I said, no, they won't. They know that's yours. In the end of the day, though, you may help everybody's life be more peaceful by sharing the experience that you have. But but don't expect that anybody else is going to have that same experience. I don't think that if you stick me in front of an easel with a bunch of paint, you will not bring peace for me. That will not translate into that's not going to quite do it. Does that mean? No, that doesn't mean anything. It means it's yours. It means that it's yours, and that is meant as a strength that you bring to the world, that through its expansion and through, you know, finding ways in which you can stretch and spread the boundaries of that, you can conquer territory that otherwise would not be accessible to you. And there is a perfect fit between the strengths that you were given and the ground that you were meant to conquer. Do you believe that? That there's a perfect fit between the strengths and the milas that you have and you're able to develop and the ground that you are able to conquer. Except that we don't realize that those tools are meant to be used. If you leave them sitting on the shelf, you have a certain friend with a friendship with that person was a mila that could help you expand the boundaries and conquer new ground. And I didn't think of him as useful in part of that development. So that becomes like what you went and complained that you had such an enormous job to do, and I gave you this tool. Oh, I didn't think of that as a tool. I thought of him as I don't know, chavrusa or a, I didn't think that was a tool for my being able to expand my milas. Expanding milas is the way to go. That's how we approach the avoda. That's how we approach the things that need to be changed. It's how we approach our avoda Hashem. It's expanding milas. Now I know everybody talks about it, but as I said, I think that the major pitfall that people were concerned about was that leads down a road called gaiva. And I believe that possibly what we've spoken about today might give a little bit of an angle to the story that can allow us to explore and expand milas without getting into the pitfall. Because that pitfall is a taking pitfall. That's a vayikach korach. That's a taking pitfall. That's taking the incredible strengths and the incredible gifts, and it's taking them as his own. We want to get to know people. We have to get to know them as who they genuinely are. And who they genuinely are may include milas that are crusted over with all sorts of dust and encrusting, and those milas that are meant to come forward because of all sorts of defensiveness, those milas are not yet known, maybe not known to the person himself and certainly not yet known to the world. And so part of our interaction with a person, of getting to know the person, is to somehow know, because I know it as a yesod from Chazal, and I know that he has a uniqueness, and if it's not coming through, it's because I don't have the expertise, and I don't know, I don't believe deeply enough in its existence. I am told that there are people in diamond mines who are able to look at a chunk and have a sense that this is not just a chunk that should be thrown away. This is a chunk that is meant to be developed, and it may become a valuable diamond. You say, well, how come the guy who's blowing up the wall can't do that? Why do you need an expert for that? The answer is, sometimes that's the mila that was given to a person, is that he can see inside a piece of coal. He can see diamonds. Somebody else has the ability to just get out there and bring lots of pieces of coal to him. That's his ability. He can explode the wall and bring lots of these little chunks. Lots of these chunks. But there's somebody who has a mila, he also can see the diamonds inside. And that when you want to get to know somebody, you want to get to know them at their... and who they are, you have to be careful, because they will put up roadblocks. They'll put up roadblocks. Why will they put up roadblocks? Why do you think somebody would put up roadblocks to getting to know them?
Gaiva.
What's that?
Gaiva.
Oh. How does that gaiva translate? If you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. That's how the gaiva translates. I can't let you genuinely know me, because if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. That's what Havagaiva, that's how the Gaiva translates.
Why is it Gaiva?
That's Gaiva because it's a 10-0 assumption. In other words, I have to be perfect in order to be lovable. It means I can't love you in your imperfection, and you can't love me in my imperfection. The whole system is a Gaiva system. It just expresses itself in this kind of put myself down kind of way. That's how it runs under the table. It runs around under the table. If it came up on top of the table and says, "I'm great," then we'd see it for what it is and we'd slap it down. But this way it can kind of run around under the table unnoticed. And it can slip between two people's legs, you know, like a little cat. But it's all the same. That's God. So if you really knew me, you would not like me. You would not. You would not appreciate my uniqueness. You would not discover my uniqueness. You're not looking to discover my uniqueness. You would not celebrate who I am. So I'm going to mask who I am. And so the masks come in various layers, right? What's the most ridiculous layer? How I look. How I look. So you get stuck on how I look. As that being an obstacle that we don't want to... Wait a second, look past that. Look past that. Look. Try to see the person. I can't see the person. Can't see, too glaring. It's too glaring. My eyes are getting all, it's too glaring. I can't see the person. Then you, the talents. You look past the talents. Who's he? He's the musician. He's the musician. Oh, good. So it worked, right? I managed to get to distract you to think that I'm the musician, that I am one of my talents. And if I am one of my talents, then you're not going to look further to find out who I am, and so I can hide behind my music. Oh, well, how about personality types? Okay, we'll go to personality types. He's that type of person. Oh, good. Yeah, now he's good. Did it work? Yeah, good. Yeah, he's an AJF. Q. With an R wing. You know, did it work? Yeah, it worked. Now we got him pegged. He's a, you know, AJQ with an R wing, and now we don't have to worry about actually getting to know him. And then, but at some point, you cut past and you say, I may not know who this is, but he has a Myla that the world is waiting for that I need. I will not achieve my Shlemos if his Myla does not come into the world. There's no way, because Rabbeinu Shlom distributed it with every single member of Klal Yisrael, there is no way for me to achieve my Shlemos if his Myla doesn't see the light of day. So for many people, I just have to mispalo. I have to mispalo. I don't have access to them. I don't have access. I don't have the ability to reach them. But I mispalo. But there are some people that are right there in front of me. Oh, I didn't notice them. Yeah, but they're only there because they're, you have some role. You were put in this position of knowing this person because you have some role in helping their Myla emerge into the world. And how are you going to do it? What tool are you going to use to help their Myla emerge into the world? Guess what? Your Myla. Nice fit. There's a perfect fit between the mission and the talents. The ability has the perfect one-to-one fit between that which we were given as Mylas and that which we are able to develop as Mylas and that which we are called upon to do. It's a one-to-one fit. It's a simple thing. If anybody's questioning that, I'll just give you a silly little example that proves that that's true. When I was a younger fellow, I was exploring different options as to what to do for a living. People thought I would make a good trial attorney, and so I went to a class on business law, and it was taught by an Israeli at the University of Rochester, and we actually learned the Uniform Commercial Code. The Uniform Commercial Code is basically the set of rules. It's the Bava Metzia, Lahavda. It's the set of rules that governs all commercial transactions. So, I was fascinated, largely because of Bava Metzia. I was fascinated. So, there was a particularly interesting section of the Uniform Commercial Code called warranties. The guarantees, warranties. And there's two types of warranties. There's implicit warranties and explicit warranties. An explicit warranty is if I say to you, this will last 4 or 5 years. If I say to you, this will endure, this is a durable thing, I want you to buy it. I don't think you're going to buy it. If I don't warranty it, so I warranty it, it will last for 5 years. So that gives you certain rights. Certain rights. You can come back to me if it's 3 years later, if the thing is not working, you can come back and say, explicit warranty. That's not anything built into the device. That's an explicit warranty. I'm allowed to give an explicit warranty, and that gives you certain rights. But there's another area of warranties called implicit warranties. Implicit warranties is, everybody would laugh. If I brought this that I'm sitting on to the store, and it's broken in pieces. And the guy says, what happened? So, I don't know. I just sat on it, and it broke into pieces. So you sat on it? You're an idiot. You can't sit on it. You broke it. I'm not giving you your money back. You broke it. You went and sat on it. So why is that funny?
Because it's a chair.
Right. The answer is because there's an implicit warranty. There's nowhere in the on the list of use instructions can it ever say this is a chair meant for hanging in your sukkah decoration. The chair. There's nowhere that. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to sell a sukkah decoration that looked like a chair, you would have to say, this is not a chair, this is only a sukkah decoration. Okay? But a chair, it's called bar das. Any bar das in the world understands that there's an implicit warranty. That implicit warranty has a name in the Uniform Commercial Code. The implicit warranty is called fitness for purpose. That's an implicit warranty that never needs to be stated. That it is fit for the purpose for which it was designed. And everybody, it's the reason it's in the Uniform Commercial Code is an implicit warranty is because everybody in the world accepts that as being an absolutely obvious statement. Whenever you find yourself feeling overwhelmed in your avoda, that there's something that feels overwhelming, the thought may come to your mind, the manufacturer made me with a task and a purpose for which I was not fit. You wouldn't put that into the Uniform Commercial Code. You would not put an exception in the Uniform Commercial Code. There's some chairs that are okay. You sit on them and they break. Okay, that's tough luck. No, you would never say such a thing. It's an understanding. Umibasari echze elokim. And from myself, I can understand. The Rabbeinu Shalom is a manufacturer. If he made every single one of us, there's an absolute warranty of fitness for purpose. There's an absolute ironclad warranty. You don't need to go through a whole philosophical lumdis. If every human being understands that there's a thing called, that there's a manufacturer has a concept called fitness for purpose, and that everybody in the world agrees to such a thing, that there's fitness for purpose, it does not make any sense that the Rabbeinu Shalom, the master manufacturer, somehow made something that was not fit for purpose. You say, well, I was fit for purpose when I was born, but I'm not fit for purpose anymore because I've done a virus in the meantime and I've messed it all up, so I'm not fit for purpose. I was fit for purpose. Their fitness for purpose is the Rabbeinu Shalom creates us every single day. If we're a maimon, that the Rabbeinu Shalom creates us every day, that means that every single day we are created with absolute fitness for purpose. So we have concepts of uniqueness, and an attempt to try to know another person as they genuinely are, for the milas that are meant to emerge in that other person, and the recognition that the tools that we will use to be able to accomplish that fantastically complex process of bringing those milas out in the world, the tools that we were given are in fact the milas that we need to be able to sit down and contemplate and say, in what way would the world be a better place if more people in the world were like me in the following regards? And ultimately to be able to say, in what way would the world be a better place if more people were like who you genuinely are? and I want to be part of the story of bringing that forward. I want to be part of the story of bringing that out into the world, just like the person who recognizes that in this clunk there's a diamond. Will he try to put up roadblocks? Yeah. And you should know, some of those roadblocks are because the person themselves don't want to be known. Sometimes it's for me. Why would I not want to know another person? Why might I not want to know another person? If I want to take advantage of them and treat them as an object, right? If I want to take advantage of somebody and treat them as just an object, the last thing I want to do is know their core, right? When you know somebody's core and their essence and what the mila is that they're trying, that they were put in the world to bring out, a little hard to take advantage of them and use them as an object, right? A little tricky. So if I have an agenda to use the person for my own little selfish interest, it's going to work against my, so I'll collude with them to buy into some of their roadblocks so that I don't actually ever get to know them, because getting to know somebody and abusing them is a little bit tricky. You got to really be a rusher for that. So better not to know who they genuinely are. By the way, when you really start to get to know a person for who they genuinely are, you will discover that the only thing that you can say about them is their name. You will discover that. At a certain point, anything else that you say feels as though it's stepping away from who they are. At a certain point, the only things left is their name. I just will leave you with this little story that a Rosh Yeshiva, who I'm very familiar with, Siyata Dishmaya, took over a yeshiva and in America, and there was a high school, and he wanted to know which boys from the 12th grade that he wanted to encourage to come into the Beis Medrash. So he sat down with the Rebbe of the 12th grade, who had been a Rebbe of the 12th grade for approximately 790 years, and was one of the ultimate veterans in Chinuch in America. And he had a list of the boys in the class, and he said, let's start with Tzvi. Yeah. So the Rebbe said, yeah, Tzvi. No, Tzvi is Tzvi. Yeah. So he tried to poke around a little bit to see if he could get a little bit more information, and there were not going to be any judgments made about Tzvi. Tzvi is Tzvi, and he's working with Tzvi and bringing out, you know, learning with Tzvi and trying to bring it. Binyamin, yeah, Binyamin. Yeah. No, Binyamin. Binyamin is Binyamin, yeah. No, Binyamin, yeah, sure. Binyamin, yeah, what do you want to say? Yeah, Binyamin, yeah. After about the sixth guy on the list, he realized that he was being taught something, and he finally got it. That here was a Rebbe. Here was a Rebbe. And he had so penetrated, because he is such an expert in seeing diamonds inside clunks, that all he could say about the Talmidim was, this is Tzvi, Nunu, and this is Binyamin, and this is Yitzchak, Nunu. He was there because he had all of these years that he had of developing and cultivating that Mila to the point where Tzvi was Tzvi and Binyamin was Binyamin. There was like, what more do you want to know? Anything that you would want to ask, does he answer questions quickly? You could answer the question. He could know. He would know the information. Is that relevant to you? I thought you were asking whether you wanted to work with him in the Beis Medrash. I simply assumed that you were asking whether he's teachable. Haven't seen Binyamin learn? Binyamin learned. But whether he answers the questions quickly or answers the questions slow, you want me to step back from who he is? For what purpose are we trying to do it? He's applying for a job as a radio announcer, so you want to know how quickly he speaks? So if you're applying for a job as a radio announcer, then you talk. It's not enough to say Tzvi is Tzvi. I have to note specifically, Tzvi speaks easily, smoothly, or Tzvi is hesitant and has a heavy stutter. Okay, as I need to know that, because I can't hire him for a job as a radio announcer, which a radio announcer has nothing whatsoever to do with who he actually is. So when you're dealing with things that have nothing to do with who he really is, then avada, you need to know some of the things that step away from who he actually is. You need to know his suit size if you want to sell him a suit. But his suit is not him. But you need to know how big his shoulders are and his middle, you know, you need to know. Otherwise, you can't sell him a suit. But nobody would claim that after you describe the person's size to the store clerk, nobody would claim, now I've given you him. I gave you him, you know, I gave you his suit size. So nobody would think of that. So we have a task, we have a mission, and it's a lifelong process of being able to call people by their name, being able to call somebody by their name. That was Odom's incredible chokhmah, that he was able to call things by their name. That means that he cut through to its essence and he was able to call it his name. The pasuk is made about Odom Arishon, that when it was all done, every name that he called was the name. Well, if I'm the first guy on the planet, if I call this a cup, what are you going to call it, a computer? Once I've called it a cup, everybody has to call it a cup. What's the big deal to say, and whatever he called it is his name, he was the first guy out. So whatever name he used, if he would have called it a jumpsuit, it would have made no difference. We would have called it a jumpsuit today. What difference would it make? The answer is, with Tzirufa Osios, with an understanding of the essence of the thing, he actually made reference to it as what it really is. And that was an amazing shvach of the Chochmah of Odom Arishon that he cut through. And Chazal used such an interesting concept. When Odom Arishon has an intimate relationship with his wife, what is the Lashon that the Pasuk uses? It uses Lashon Yediyah. Yeah, he knew her. He knew her. That does not mean on a surface level. He knew her. And you know what it led to? His ability to call her a name. That's what it led to. He was able to give her her name. And when Chazal say that Adam Arishon was shown all of the creatures of the world and he was bo on every one of them, yeah, that's what was left for Adam Arishon to do. That's all done. That's the only thing that was left. It was to be boil every single creature in the world. If it was fly, that's what he needed. Chazal say that's the expression for the fact that he knew them. He knew them. He cut through all of the surface stuff and he cut through to knowing them. And when he was all done with that task, what did he do? He turned to the Rabbeinu Shlom. He said, I'd like to name you also. I'd like to name me. And he called himself Odom. And he called the Rabbeinu Shlom by his name. And the Rabbeinu Shlom said, got it. He never for one second stopped to ask what's really going on there, what Mila needs to be brought out into the world, and ultimately it comes with a person's name. And that is, of course, an ever-expanding process. It's not like the person's name that you call them at his bris is the same name that we call them at his levaya when in 97 years later. The name has expanded to include so many of these Milas, because we're always working to expand the Milas. So that I just came for one little ha'ara. We have a fantastic opportunity to do a little bit of a course correction for those who are not focused on their milas, either because they think that they have to do tackle the chasonos first, or they think that if they handle milas, then they're going to slip into gaiva, a mahalach. How would it look if everybody in the world was a little bit more like me in these regards? And I think that with this little bit of an opening, and I'm sure much of it is familiar to many of you, I'm sure that many of you have thought along these lines before, I'm just offering it as a sort of a, you know, each person has a different way of saying it, and if each person says it their way, so then more people will come to understand the concept, because each person will say it over in their unique way, in the milas that they were given, in the mesholim that they were given, in the angle that they were given to be able to try to understand it. And so I just came to say it my way, in the hopes that each of you will say it, Be'ezer Hashem, your way. Shkayach Godol. You want to ask a question? Please.
I'm not sure I understand. You said, if I understand correctly, how part of the non-gaiva aspect of recognizing what malus is, is the wish to disseminate it to others. Is it just that desire that you want others to have it also, or to actually go and try to bring it out and to give to others, even though you say we aren't going to succeed in fully giving it?
The mila obligates. That's all. A mila obligates.
In what
way does a mila obligate? Well, if you recognize that you want the milas for the people, for the world, if you recognize that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave me this mila for a purpose, for a reason, so then you're going to want to see to it that everybody, that the mila has its expression in the world. Whatever that expression is, whether the expression is teaching it to others, whether it's just relating to others on that level, whatever the mila obligates, but the mila always obligates. There's nothing in the world that does not obligate us. Everything in this world that we are conscious of, everything that we are conscious of creates responsibility. To have consciousness is to have responsibility. The only one who has no responsibility is the person who does not have consciousness. By definition, having consciousness... What's that? By definition, having consciousness is a responsibility. And so if I have a consciousness of a particular mila, that consciousness obligates. There is no way that I could say, I have a consciousness, but it in no way obligates. Those two are contradictory terms. No consciousness? Okay. No consciousness, there can't be any responsibility. Okay? Good. Any other quick comments?
The idea that there's no basis for working on this joyness in Yiddishkeit, and the only thing we have to concentrate is working on our mindless.
Okay, we have to be careful when we say, you should know that whenever we're trying to correct something, and the Svarim may often do this as well, whenever you're trying to correct for an error that exists in the world, you exaggerate. So I do anyway. And you exaggerate. I didn't say that there's no room for working on chesronos. I said that the tools for working on the chesronos are the milas. That the tool that I have at my disposal to work on chesronos are my milas. But the notion that that's somewhat prerequisite, that I first have to work on my chesronos, and when I'm done, I will have a pile of milas, that's not going to happen. That doesn't work. Is that a little bit more clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other quick questions, comments, clarifications?
I was wondering if someone has awareness of his milas.
Yes.
And they're trying to spread it out. And by seeing everyone starts noticing everyone else's faults and that they don't have those milas.
Then he wasn't focusing on milas.
I'm saying, how does he exactly have his milas and on the other hand understand that no one else is not?
Well, I assume that when he made his list of milas, he probably noticed that it wasn't an all encompassing list. He probably noticed that he is not the world's answer to white bread, right? He probably noticed that there's some things that he has to work on. So I presume that the orientation becomes a growth orientation. Just as I'm trying to bring out the milas of others, I'm trying to bring my mila into the world, but if it doesn't accept that people are not perfect, as a basic premise of the whole growth process, all the perfect people are already in Harmonuchos. Yeah.
How do good midas, good milas have a knock-on effect to other midas?
Well, for example, let's say a person is absolutely doggedly disciplined when it comes to making money. Workaholic. They really are very disciplined, organized and disciplined when it comes to other areas of Avodas Hashem, for example. They're just it's a haphazard. They look like a volunteer. Should look like a volunteer. You know, they stop in, they don't stop in, they do it, they don't do it, you know, they feel bad afterwards, you know, whatever, they just, it's mamish hot plop. So where's he supposed to turn? What is he supposed to turn to in order to make a change in that regard? To his mila, right? He says, see how there's a spillover effect. What's the take-home lesson from my incredible discipline that I have in the workplace? What is the spillover? What's the takeover? What's the take home of that to my Avodas Hashem?
So it's the tools I use to progress in one mila are the same tools to progress in all other milas.
That I can't say. It sounds like a bigger question than a 1 second question. It sounds like you probably have to think about that. I can't say without analyzing the question more carefully.
It's not the actual success. It's the process that got to that success. It's the same process I can reach.
It's not a success. He found it that way. He didn't even work on it yet. He's before the point where he's expanded it. He found it there. He looked over an inventory of himself and he says, you know what? When it comes to this and this, I am doggedly persistent and I just keep after it, and there's just nothing that stops me. And oh, that's powerful.
So what he carries over is the consistency to the other mind.
Again, he expands it to try to understand its real core. This woman is not called upon to paint her kids. That's not the take-home lesson is, oh, painting is calm, so I should paint my kids. That's not... No, there's the spillover is from understanding what is it? What is my real mila? What's the core mila here? That is, if it doesn't feel like a core mila, then it isn't it yet. It's a core mila that emerges in this context. Without doing the yeah buts, yeah, but that's only in work and it's not. Don't do the yeah buts. What's the mila? And that mila needs to be expanded on. Again, the check is: would I wish it for everyone? Okay? Cultive.
Give me 3 minutes to talk to somebody on the way out.
Sure.
I'll meet you outside.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to pick him out the best magician. I'll watch you out in those 3 minutes.